We begin our time together in the awareness of God revealed as the transcendent, the omnipresent, the immanent, the divine indwelling. Our liturgical reading is from the Gospel of Matthew 11, 28 through 30. Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who labor and are burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart, and you will find rest for yourselves. For my yoke is easy and my burden light." Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who labor and are burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart, and you will find rest for yourselves, for my yoke is easy and my burden light." Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who labor and are burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart, and you will find rest for yourselves, for my yoke is easy and my burden light." The Gospel of the Lord. As we open our eyes and begin to engage our senses a little bit more, you're welcome to share any work ideas or anywhere, any ways that this scripture had special meaning to you this evening. Tracy.
I heard the work idea of the where's your attention, and of course, attracted attention and directed attention is suggested, encouraged. But through the three readings or four readings, I thought about when Jesus was in the garden and he said, you know, please take this cup from me if possible. And then when he was on the cross and he said, you know, where the heck are you? Sorry, that's a little bit slang. But then I thought further, and it's basically he's still communing with the Absolute, even though it may not be sound so of delight, but his attention is still directed to the One. Yeah.
Thank you. That's such a big deal. Our attention, attracted, directed, it's so big. Yeah. Alan, thank you.
I heard the work idea a man can't do. I retain this illusion that I can do and let go of some of it, but I retain a lot of it. And because I have this illusion that I can do, I have to work hard to get wherever I want to get, and I have a big, heavy burden. But if I could realize that I can't do, then I would assume that my burden gets light and easy.
Yeah. I share that experience with you, too. There's a part of my personality, a mechanical part of my personality, that when active thinks it can do. And then when Deputy Steward begins to kick in and those set of eyes begin to influence the thinking, I realize I cannot do. And the multiplicity is there exposed.
Yeah, we're kind of mixed bags.
Yeah.
Can see and can't see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very. Thank you for that, because it's a part of the commentary we're going to work on tonight with conscious effort and mechanical effort. There was a third hand I saw somewhere. Yes, thank you, Russ.
I guess I heard the ray of creation in the side octave and just the burden heavy in the law of 96, law of 48, gradually gets lighter. Yeah. In 24 and heaven forbid 12, and just to me, I thought it was a beautiful way of kind of bringing a little bit of oomph to that.
Yeah, you can just feel God's love and the Trinity being pressed down through that reading. Isn't it so potent? Yeah. Mm. Jody.
I just have to say that this morning I was feeling overwhelmed with all the reading I think I need to be doing and all the sitting I think I need to be doing. And I just felt overwhelmed. And then I got on the computer to pull up the daily, you know, scripture and saw that. And it was just like, I just felt the Lord saying, my yoke is easy, you know, don't make it hard. So it was exactly what I needed at that moment.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Powerful. Thank you. Yes, Billy.
So the phrase that stuck with me every single time was, I am meek. And it made me think of that in the one of the commentaries, it says that meek is the opposite of resentful. If you're not feeling resentment, everything seems lighter. And the other word that popped out to me was yoke, and that makes me think of the word yoga and the meaning of that, and that it's a union and a combining.
Yeah.
And so if you are yoked to the One,
mm-hmm.
Your life's going to be a lot lighter,
mm-hmm.
a lot less burdensome.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, Lee. We really want to hear what you have to say, Lee.
What I heard was, my yoke upon you. And I thought about first conscious shock and how he said, but your burden lighter. And I was thinking about impressions coming in and falling on correct centers and being lighter based on first conscious shock.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you. Sandra?
I made a connection with self-observation and non-identification and self-remembering because I felt like Jesus was self-remembering. But in order to give up all of this burden, it sort of started with self-observing. Yeah. That's when it starts getting lighter. Mm-hmm. But also for the lighter, easier, I thought about page 10 and doing all of it lighter with delight.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to see it, yeah. Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. The importance of doing this work with an attitude of delight. There were a couple of things that came to my mind as in reading it, and one was the yoke. You know, being a farm boy, we actually used a yoke. And there's something about that yoke being on the cow, especially when it was doing the plowing. It didn't have much option. It was very limited. It was very directed in where it was going. And it tied in with the last part where it says, my burden is light. And the work has this idea that we have to come under more laws in order to come under fewer laws. And light in the work is a representation of what? Consciousness. That's right. Yeah. My burden is consciousness. Now, you wouldn't think that'd be a burden. But as we know, everyone in this room, as a seeker, has limited their lives, limited their influences, has yoked themselves for their spiritual transformation. And there's a little bit of a burden to that, isn't there? It's not easy. And if it was easy, maybe the seats would be filled, but I don't know. But effort is needed, conscious effort, for our spiritual transformation. So thank you all for your comments, and thank you for being here tonight. Any other comments on the gospel reading? Yes. Thank you, Cheryl.
This may sound simple, but for me, if something happens where I'm not able to have my morning sit and my practice and partner with God in the morning, my day is much more difficult.
Yeah.
But when I get centered and partnered, there is very little for me to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it just...
Yep. It's a whole different day, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I have a question for us. Can we be what we know? Can we be the work? We had a week to practice that. And to reconnect us. He gives a suggestion. And this is right near the end of the commentary that we worked with last week and what led into our center of gravity question, our exercise for the week. And he says, try to observe what particular person you go most asleep about, the person with whom you are most negatively identified. Once you have acknowledged this, that you're identified, that you even do hate, try to make this particular occasion of being asleep an occasion for self-remembering. You cannot just remember yourself in general for nothing, about nothing, so to speak, for there's nothing to work on in that case. You cannot just go about looking down your nose and thinking that you're remembering yourself. This is most important. You cannot remember yourself unless you know through sincere observation that you are asleep in some specific sense. Then you must awaken in this part of yourself and try to be what you know. It's necessary to be what you know by working on yourself. All this brings us to the octave of the work, one note of which is the application of the work to our being. Do you remember the work octave? Do, re, mi, fa. What is do? Go ahead, shout it out. Shout it out louder. Active receptivity, okay. Knowledge of the work. What's Ray then? Application of work ideas. What's me? Yes. So if we start out with valuation, do is the valuation, which means we have to learn the work. Re is then we apply it to our being, and that's what we are working on the last 2 weeks with the commentaries. Re is, and we'll find out tonight through our sharing, is the recognition of personal difficulties. So we've got do, re, mi. There's an interval, a shock. It's necessary. Does anybody know what fa is? So, la, si. If you ever find out, please let me know. I've never found it anywhere in the work. I found clues to it, but I've never found it laid out. And it'll be very interesting to see what's on the other side, because the work says that, much like what Alan was describing in his experience of the gospel reading, is that we're asleep and then we become conscious. And we go to sleep and we become conscious. So there's a circular movement right there, a reoccurrence, right? Do, re, mi, do, re, mi, do, re, mi. You just want to get over to fa for one moment. I'll give you a clue with fa next week. This leads to new being and its refinement. The subject of the work, each one of you, is yourself. So unless you observe yourself, there's nothing to work on. The link between the work taught on the blackboard and your being is self-observation, without which you can never join the knowledge of the work to your being and be it. Negative emotions are the greatest curse of life in yourself and others. Humanity is governed by them. Observation and separation are necessary all our life. Yes. But can you be the work? In short, can you live the work, not merely remember it? If you try to live it, it will feed you all your life. That's so powerful, you just feel like we can close the book up and go home right with that, you know? That's so beautiful, and it's so true, as we all know, and that's why we're here. Because it is a lifelong transformation journey in Christ. So our exercise was, can we be the work? Can we be what we know? What did we experience this week around that? What insights came? Thank God you're here. Yes.
Coming out of early prayer one morning, I heard the voice in my head, one of the eyes that wanted to make a critical comment about something that she experienced in there. And I recognized it in the moment as negative. I just kept the lips closed and really truly had a sort of a inward pat on the back, like, I didn't say it. And then got with my work partner a little while later, and it was such a straightforward, simple experience of in the moment.
Yeah.
Conscious awareness and effort and wish and experience that I felt free to share it with my work partner, just because it was so fresh and so simple. So I felt like that was grace, that it got to be said, but it was said as an example of a work idea, a work moment.
Yeah, that's so good. That experience, just in keeping it within rather than letting it go out, there's an increased hydrogen experience from that, just that alone, right?
Yes.
And then to process it even further, to neutralize it even further inside, that is big work. Yeah, thank you, Tracy. See, what I love about that is so many times in the work, we've set ourselves up to work on the big things. But the work early in the commentaries in book one, Nickel tries to remind us so many times, please do little work. Because all negative emotions lead to what? Violence. And so you'll notice that an internal account starts, a little idea like Tracy was talking about, a little comment starts, and it doesn't get out. That's good. But if it's not processed, if the light of consciousness isn't shown on it, if we are not giving ourselves a first conscious shock at that moment and bringing a work idea up to the place of that impression, and interestingly enough, that impression isn't out there, that impression is inside of us, right? It didn't ever get out. It never got out into the world. But it was neutralized inside. And if it's not neutralized inside, the energy is still there, and then what happens? Another negative thought arises and an emotion, an afflictive emotion, joins it. And before you know it, there's an accumulating effect, and then sooner or later, it's going to get out there, right? And we've probably noticed the world is not a better place because we've allowed our negative emotions to get out into the world. And so the work encourages us, do the little things. So when you're sharing, please be encouraged to share the little minutia things, because they are so important. They are the beginning, the building blocks to the bomb. What else? Rusty, thank you.
Yesterday evening went to a Round Rock baseball game, and for some reason the homework was really present in that experience. The first thing was that there was no rush to get there. It was just kind of this thing, let's just, you know, leave at an hour, we're not fighting traffic, and it's maybe cooled down a little bit. So that kind of puts it in a different space immediately for me. And kind of the spur to see it was one of the Houston Astros was going through a little rehab and wanted to see him. And it was just this delightful combination of this cool breeze.
Yeah.
And sitting there about two rows back, watching this unfold without any stake in it, I frankly couldn't care less who won. Seeing moments of this star baseball player interact so beautifully with his teammates, which are, you know, minor league players, mm-hmm. and also with the opposition team, which, again, I just kept thinking, how beautiful, just presence, just presence. And then the thing that I think I'll remember for a long time was the front row toward the end of the game, about four or five young boys got there. And I just observed these guys kind of going at each other, maybe about 8, 9, 10 years old, and put myself back at that age. And the little one-upsmanship, the little this, little that, you know. And then in the midst of that, I saw one of these young guys had a younger sister that you could tell just adored her brother. And just the way she would look at him. And he had enough presence to pay attention to her and not totally just get wrapped up and be embarrassed or any of that stuff. And I just saw that as such a beautiful, beautiful moment. And you think of how many of those beautiful moments have been just completely missed. Mm-hmm. Just being in a different space, just up to your own stuff.
Yeah.
And I'll always remember that girl's look at her little, at her big brother.
Yeah. Thank you, Rusty. Thank you for living the work. Suzanne.
So I have a... I find it really easy to catch myself when I'm acting out externally, you know, having some kind of interaction with somebody and not showing my best self. And so I can observe that pretty well after the fact, at least, or even while I'm doing it. But because I live my life so internally a lot, I find it a little bit more difficult. Either it's, I find that I have this overall feeling of something, and it's like an anxious feeling, and so I have to figure out what that is. I had this incident with my daughter. She was staying home 1 week from camp, and I was working. I was trying to juggle, trying to keep her busy and working myself. And I had these like just series of thoughts that came one after the other. So it was really hard for me to even keep track of them or notice them. But it was around this anxiety around not being a good mother, not spending enough time with my daughter, and then a lot of associations about my upbringing and how I didn't have good modeling, and a lot of guilt that came and shame that I was going to have the same modeling and give that same modeling to my child. So I just noticed, and it was so one after the other that I was a little stunned, and I was thankfully able to kind of remember all of them, the phases, and kind of think about what the feelings were that came up. Yeah. And I wrote it down really quickly, and I remembered this is not I, because I usually forget that part. I usually just like, okay, this was interesting and an observation. And so I remembered to sit with it and grieve a little bit, because I felt like I needed to feel the feelings that I was feeling, but then also take a step back and sit with the this isn't true necessarily, all of these things.
Yeah.
So
that's so good. That feeling of this is not I, and saying it with such resolve, such commitment intellectually, that you know this is not I. This is just a pattern, an energy pattern of thoughts that were going through my mind, right? To know that so firmly, and then at the same time, to feel the same thing. This is not I. And for me, I mean, I really had to be very conscious in applying it to all three centers to truly separate from it. And then I had to feel it in my body. this is not I. I'm so glad that you began to take that and move that as a second step in the process. Way to go. Because this is really quite new to you. Yes. You know what the third step is?
What?
We talked about this last week now. All that free energy exists. Creation. Oh, this is worth saying. There, when we non-identify, you can feel immediately a nebula of energy within your body. And that nebula of energy, I get the word nebula from Gnosis 1. It's the only place I've ever seen it described as that, but it is so clear with my personal experience. A nebula of energy that then is available to do what with? Practice self-remembering. Exactly. Choose your Christ moment. Be the Christ in that moment. And you've got all this energy to do it with. It's extraordinary. Yeah. If for me, growing up as a Catholic, it is the closest experience in this life to the idea of hell, identification, purgatory, non-identification, and heaven with being self-remembering. And so that third component, for me, is the movement from purgatory to heaven. And we've got all of that energy to do it with now. Good work, Susanna. Who else? Can we be what we know? Yes, Lynn.
The other night, I was with my grandchildren, and it was getting late, and I was trying to get them into bed, and I was becoming irritated with the whole fact because they were not listening to what I was saying, and of course, there were many distractions for them. And I could, for a minute, I could feel the irritation growing within, and I heard within me a voice saying exactly what my mother would say, which was, you know, yelling at them to get into bed and, you know, just turning it into a horrible moment. But when that occurred, I also, it was like there was a moment that I could stop and think that that was not who I wanted to be. And so I got a book, and we had like a bedtime story, but the energy that you just talked about, it just kind of opened up. I mean, it was a whole different outcome.
Yeah.
And I felt, and I could tell by my grandkids' countenance, that there was this feeling of love and acceptance in the room. And all of a sudden, going to bed with that present,
yeah,
was a delightful moment.
Isn't that something? An impression is there. A work idea comes up, and all of a sudden we're breathing easier, and all of a sudden we can feel it in the body. A beautiful moment has just happened because you could work. You could be the work in that moment. Yeah. And how interesting it is to see our parent come out. And you realize, oh, it is so true. My personality is just a series of characters. It's an imitation of all the influences that I was given when I was younger. That's it. And yet we work so hard and fight so hard to protect that illusion. It's bizarre old world. Yeah. good work in a moment. Who else? I mean, I know everybody. I know everybody had this because, I mean, just a simple drive or an email that just like, wait a minute, it looks a little bit terse. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's nothing. Or somebody says something, you're kind of taking it in. It's like someone said to me, you know, when you said to me last week, good for you, I took that in as, oh, good for you. And I know that you didn't mean good for you. You meant good for you. Yeah. See, where did that come from? We have things like that happening all the time. Billy.
So, an idea that I haven't worked with very much is the I owe you everything, you owe me nothing. And every time I say that, I tend to say it backwards, but I think I got it right today.
Yeah, you did this week.
Okay, good.
But
this
we
is
have
very
the other,
telling.
Yeah, if you ever want to revisit it, we have it on tape.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So we had at home, you know, it's a stupid incident, but it's one that kind of comes up periodically, and it's about who's going to wash the towels. This is dumb. Really dumb. Anyway, I got offended, you know, that I thought he was going to do it, and he didn't do it. And I kept thinking of that idea, and I absolutely could not wrap my head around it. The I owe you everything, you owe me nothing.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, no, you owe me, you owe me. You owe me big time. I've done the towels for the last 10 years. You can do them today. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that is seriously where it was. And yeah. Even though I had it there,
yeah.
Man, the identification was so, I was so hooked. That even knowing it, I could not free myself from it. It took a good 24 hours.
Yeah.
And then he did the towels. And that helped. So I thought everyone else is talking about these lovely things that they, you know, noticed. And I'm just like.
Early on in the commentaries, this is the first time for the evening on this one, Nickel says so many times, work on the little things.
Yeah.
Because they do grow, you can see an example like that. It seems like it's tedious and it's not worth processing. It is a big deal. Yeah. And we got to do this with laughter. We got to do it with delight, right?
Well, that's what I finally got to. It was like, this is the stupid, it's so stupid, it's just funny.
Yeah.
You can't do anything but laugh.
I know. In these relationships, the little tit-for-tat things that we see going on that we do, and sometimes I'll just let it play out, and I'll watch it along the way and not, you know, not take it seriously, but just watch it play, and I'll see little things like, but then through inner taste, it tells you, okay, this is no longer play.
Yeah.
You know, it's time.
Yeah.
It's time to draw the line here. And you know, and then we laugh afterwards, just like, oh, you know what's going on with me at that? And we
right.
just get so many laughs. And it's like, oh, you know what was going on with me? And
right.
you see the same something very similar in terms
exactly.
of the afflictive emotion, right?
Exactly, because I did that. I was like, you know, what was happening with me is, why do I always have to do everything?
Yeah.
Poor me.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, cool.
Yeah. I think it was Maurice Nichols' wife who is quoted as saying that she prayed in their relationship that at least one of them was sane at a time. And if it wasn't her, whoever it was, they got it. When we are both crazy, all bets are off, right? But if one person can remain sane, and you know, that's a gift of what we do in this community with each other. We have such a priestly way here of being the confessors for each other. so that we can say things like this. We can have these moments like this. Some of you may not have heard this, but when the Dalai Lama's brother, Tenzin Chogyal, was here, I think it was around 2002 or so, he sat in on one of the classes, and he was familiarized with the second line group, and he said, "This is your confession. You're confessing to each other." "Yeah, we confess to each other." And he was so taken by that. He said, "We can't get the monks to do this." And he says, "And you're doing it openly like this." And he went over to get his wife, Rinchenla, "You must hear this." And he was so taken that we have this nature here in this community to see each other as Christ. We self-remember for each other when we recognize that the other person is having a moment. And we can see in the body language, you know, you've seen the look on Donald's face, you've seen his posture, you've heard his words, you know when he's having a moment, and yet you still look at him and say, "Christ." That's what we do. It's a very priestly thing we do in this community. And then we take it from here, we take it into our home, we take it into our place of business, we take it where we shop. It's just glorious. But we have to be the work to do that, right? Yeah. We have to be what we know. Valerie, was your hand still up? Yes.
Yes. This is small, but oh well, here we go.
Small's good.
Yeah. There is a decision I've been praying about for definitely 2 months, and something I've felt that was on the horizon that was probably going to turn out a way I did not want it to. But I've been trusting and hoping that maybe it wouldn't go this way. Well, anyway, I'm fixing to have to implement a decision in my life probably in about 9 days. Mm-hmm. Something that I'm not happy about, proud of, but it's the way it is. And so the work I did that came to me was life is happening the only way it can. And that's really saving me right now. Mm-hmm. And it's given me, as I speak it and listen and just keep, I wrote it down and just said, that's it. This is the only way it can be done. Yeah. There's no other thing to do. Yeah. So I feel that once I do this in about 9 days, I think I'm already feeling lighter. I'm just grateful that I know God's got it, and he already knows, and I really don't know anything else from there, except for that's just the phrase right now that's saving me.
Yeah.
To know that I'm doing all I can do, and yeah, Abba has to do the rest, and so be it.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. I don't know. It'll turn out one way or another down the road, yeah, but it's what it is, and I'm grateful for this work idea.
Yeah.
It's helping me,
mm-hmm,
to let go and just let it be.
Yep.
And put it in his hands, and I don't want to think about it anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, definitely let it weigh me down like it has been.
Yeah.
I'd just rather be free with it and move on and just do what I can with it.
Yeah.
That's
it
all.
It will come and it will go. And we don't have many opportunities for these peak experiences in our life. Keep your practice. Keep lights on. Self-observation is so important right now. Okay? And that work idea, you've said it. I cannot help it. I might as well will it. All right? Get behind it with the lights on, observing it. That's all we need to do right now is observe it. What's our role? Self-remembering in Christ. Right? So we'll join you in knowing that divine order is present and is happening in your life, that we know it and we feel it. Yes.
Thank you. All of you, thank you.
Stay in touch with your minister. If you have a work partner, stay really very closely connected to your work partner. Okay? Who else? Can you be the work? Nathan? Do we have a right side, left side mic? Yeah, left side mic.
So this commentary invited us to find an individual that we go to sleep with the most. Mm-hmm. And I wrestled with that for a little bit and couldn't quite isolate that person.
Yeah.
And took a turn and just looked for the thing that made me go to sleep the most. And really felt like I'd put my finger on it. This notion of the generation of resources. Once something strikes me and sort of fills that role, mm-hmm. I would justify all sorts of behavior.
Yeah.
And pretty much 9 to 5, 7 days a week, once I start thinking about that,
yeah.
Then I become very identified. And so for the last couple days, but mostly today, in the event I was that thought entered my mind, I just took a pause and allowed some space before I acted on it, and found it to be, found the work filling in there a significant amount. And there was space, and a lot of the little crickets and squirrels inside me wanted to start thinking about, you know, the lot just went up for sale next door, maybe we should think about that, or fill in the blank.
Yeah.
But it allowed me a lot of time today, and I was able to drive out to Paleface to scout for my 12-year-old son's birthday party. And typically this is a drive that I would drive myself crazy with, thinking that certainly somebody with 3 kids should be generating revenue in the middle of a weekday and not just driving around like an irresponsible individual. Instead, it was quite a lovely drive, and I listened to the sermon on Sunday, which I just thought was amazing, and here's my plug for the sermon on Sunday. I'll listen to it another 3 times before this coming Sunday. But it felt like the work had space in there, and it was just this, before you become identified, just give it 3 breaths. And that was enough for it to sort of go on its merry way, and I was able to stay present with the moment.
Yeah.
And it felt like what Nickel was talking about a bit, of what's it mean to live the work or to be the work.
Yes. So, yeah. Thank you. You said something really key in there, too, that we don't talk about a lot, that's an important experience for us to recognize and look forward to. And that is, Gurdjieff defined time as what? Does anybody have it? Time. Yes, something subjectivity. You. Unique. Unique subjectivity. Time. He describes time as unique subjectivity. And that you said, when we exercise the work, there is an experience that we have of time slowing down. Have we noticed that? Yeah, isn't that something? It's like the butler is taking his time to go up to the front door, to open the door, to see what negatively wants to come in or what is inside that we don't want to get out. You know, the dog usually runs out or the cat gets out when you open. Time slows down. It's like the butler slows things down. And that's a very good thing to recognize and look forward to, because it gives us more opportunity to bring light into that moment. And it is a very good description, unique subjectivity. Yeah. Thanks for being a good dad, too.
So to answer the homework question, I think it's yes and no. There were certainly some recurrences where it could not be the work. It could see it happening, but it was already identified and in play.
Yeah.
But the the work idea that came in, for one, that it knew that this was not going to be the last encounter of this event. Mm-hmm. And so it sat to make a wish. You know, if it could have the redo,
yeah,
what would happen? So even though it was a no, there was kind of a yes to that. But the other end that I noticed repeatedly throughout the week is similar to what we were just talking about with time and earlier grace and ideas of the work. I would be in the middle of a sentence and something would come in that would make it say, please don't finish that thought. And it was able to navigate a substitute that was much more kinder or less violent or negative.
Yeah.
And somehow that is being the work.
Yeah. Good living. Yeah. That's living the work. Yeah, thank you. Jody.
Since I'm still learning so much about the work, and I just want to use this opportunity to say I think I understood, or I felt the work at work in me. Mm-hmm. And I believe it was external considering. Uh-huh. I was making a trip home to Mississippi and got pulled over by a policeman for speeding. And he came up to my window and told me how fast I was going and ended up giving me a ticket. But I could tell he hated to give me the ticket. You know, he didn't want to do it, but he did it. And he handed it to me, and I just signed my name and, you know, didn't say a word. And he said, "Do you have any questions?" I said, "No." So he said, "Well, have a good day." I didn't say anything. And he walked back to his car. Well, he said, "Wait, I'm going to make sure you can pull back out on the highway safely." And, you know, kind of when he said that, I started getting this feeling. But he went on, and I got out on the road. And, I mean, as soon as I pulled off, I thought, God, that was such an opportunity to say to him, thank you for what you do.
Yeah.
You know, thank you for getting in that car every day and having the courage to be a policeman. And I just regretted, you know, not taking that opportunity. But the thought that I even thought to do that showed me that there, you know, the work is sinking in. Because in the past, if I'd gotten a ticket, I'd have been, you know, pissed off at him the rest of the day.
Right.
But it was, I mean, before I even got back on the highway, I was wishing that I had thanked him for doing his job.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Now, what makes that external considering and not internal considering? What is the factor? So you can think about that officer all you want, right? What's the factor that makes it internal considering or external considering or consideration of other? That's close, but that's not quite it. It has to do with inner taste. Exactly. External considering must include the realization of myself in the picture. That's so important. If you don't have yourself in the picture, if you're not seeing yourself in the picture, it's either consideration of other or it's internal considering. Okay? This is a really big deal with external considering. We can't leave ourselves out. Yeah. Good work. You know, I'm not sure if you can see this or not. Can you see this very well? Yeah, I kind of thought so, and I left it up here thinking you might sit a little closer, so there's kind of some motives involved with it. But, repeat that.
Those Christmas balls.
Yeah. Okay, so what I'm going to do is just walk through it real quick here, and I'm going to move it to the floor so you can see it closer, and then we'll get right to the next commentary. But This is the food diagram. You can find this, I think, right around 190, page 190 in the commentaries, and in book one, of course. So the work is saying that we have three food groups: the mouth food, the air, and the food of impressions. This one, we can go a lot of our life without. Many days. This, minutes. This, seconds. It says that food comes in at a particular level. The higher the number here you see, the higher, the more dense the matter is. So this ends up actually being matter, or I should say the denser the energy is. This is actually energy in a material form that we take it in our mouth. And then it begins to be digested in the middle part, and then energy goes up from this digestion and becomes intellectual energy, and then it goes back down to the emotional center, and then ends up as C12. Air comes in, not as a dense material, but in a different form, and it comes in and it is digested in the lung area, then its energy goes up into impressions, comes back down into the emotional center, and then again is transformed into the body. And impressions come in as dough 48. Then they go, if there is a shock, if the work is there, then they go into the middle part of the body for further digestion, and then end up feeding the body even further. So with that quick overview, I'm going to move this to the floor, and then we'll get to the commentary. While I'm doing this, every time this comes out, thank you, Billy, we get working on the food diagrams. You know, will it opened up? Yeah. Perfect. When I first started in the work, I went ahead and I memorized the hydrogen, oxygen, and carbon component that is necessary for each digestion. So, for instance, dough 48 goes in to ray 24 in the lungs, it needs an oxygen and it needs a carbon to transform it in the work idea. So I had written all those down and put them in memory, and I went in and I sat down and I was talking to Tim about it. And he said, wow, that's a lot to know. He said, I don't know that. And I'm wondering why you need to. Now, that was a good question. The middle compartment in the three-story factory. So I'm going to go through this commentary very quickly, and I really don't want to get into the minutiae of it, because you've just heard from that that it's not important. But what is important is to recognize what happens when we are negative and we have incomplete digestion. Likewise, what happens, what's our experience of the food groups when they are being properly digested? That is to say, when balanced man is using the right part of the center for the right purpose at the right time. Okay, there's something entirely different going on. So listen for that here. Let's take today, in studying the everlasting subject of negative emotions, which, as you know, lead down to violence eventually, the idea of man as a three-story factory. Man takes in ordinary food, air, and impressions. Now let us trace the fate of the transformation of ordinary food into higher hydrogens. Food comes in at the number of 768, which is derived from a level in the ray of creation, or rather from the three octaves of radiation, which are nothing but a brief contracted resume of the ray itself. Ordinary food comes in as a passive dough into the body, meets the transforming forces in the stomach, and is digested. That is, it's transformed from, say, a beefsteak into something much subtler, molecules which can enter the bloodstream. I'm speaking very roughly. It comes in as a positive substance and is acted upon by an active, it comes in as a passive substance and is acted on by an active substance called carbon. The result being that it passes from the state of matter of 768 to the state of matter designated by the number 384, and by being acted upon by carbon 192. Now let me remind you that no transformation is possible except with a passive substance, which in the work is called an oxygen. If, for example, a man starts from the idea that he can do, no psychotransformation is possible. Let's continue. This substance designated as 384 is acted upon further and becomes 192, and then again is acted upon further and becomes a substance alchemically designated as 96. Now this is placed in the middle factory, the middle compartment of the three-story factory, and it's called Fa 96. We are speaking of the transformation of literal food into hydrogen in the three chemical laboratories, namely the lower compartment. What's the lowest compartment? Moving center. The middle compartment and the upper compartment. Now, supposing the middle compartment is negative. If you are negative, that is, if your middle compartment is negative, it is comparable to a laboratory that is, as it were, drenched with water or even poison. Therefore, the food that is now in the level of Fa 96 will not be made properly, and you will lose vitality. But suppose that Fa 96 becomes Sol 48 in the upper compartment. This means that the beefsteak has become a substance that can be used as thought. Then, mysteriously enough, it has to come down again to the middle compartment, La 24. Now, if it comes down like that into the middle laboratory, and if you are very violently negative in the middle compartment, it is comparable to an explosion in the laboratory. So the substance called La 24 is broken up and cannot go down to its real destiny, which is to develop itself fully to C12. Do we know that experience of indigestion because of negativity? Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is, even after I was aware of it, I would still feed myself and drink myself in order to overcome negativity as a calming mechanism, a coping mechanism. Doesn't that just sound stupid? Yeah. And that was when I saw that happening, it was really, for me, it was another example of the work idea that we love our negativity. That I wouldn't do that if I really, really could separate from the enjoyment of negativity. Therefore, with this brief note about alchemical hydrogens in the body, you can see how very dangerous it is if the middle compartment of the three-story factory is governed by negative emotions. It will interfere with the uprising octave and interfere with the downgoing octave, which goes into the lowest compartment as a highly developed substance called C12. From this, we can see without much meditation that being negative will, on one side, decrease your resistance. Being negative, let me read it again. From this we can see, without much meditation, that being negative will, on one side, decrease your resistance to illness, and on the other side, weaken your sex. Okay, that line right there was enough for me to not want to eat and drink when I was negative. Whatever it takes. It is most important to keep the second compartment pure. He's talking about the emotional center. As G said, most illnesses are due to psychological causes. So we can understand that indulging and enjoying our negative emotions will interfere with our physical health and sex energy. Okay. So with that as a backdrop, our commentary tonight is the difference between mechanical and conscious effort. And if you want to, and you'd be encouraged to do this, book one, right around page 190, he starts the diagrams on the octaves, then the three octaves. And it's worth reading. It's not worth memorizing. But as you read it, apply it to yourself. Wonder about it. And just recognize the key components, that there is a digestion that's happening of impressions when they come in, and why the work puts such high valuation on giving yourself the what? The first conscious shock. Exactly. Bring in a work idea up to the place of that impression. Because we've already set the backdrop that the world is governed by negative emotions, and that we do enjoy our negativity. So we need something there to break up the mechanicalness. We need a conscious shock. That was the idea of last week's work exercise. Can you be what you know? Can you give yourself a first conscious shock in a moment when you're recognizing that it's being negative, that it has lost in that moment any realization of the divine? Likewise, if we're negative, through our complete observation that includes the first story, the body, we would recognize that when we are negative, our breathing is incomplete. Right? Yeah, we know that. And if it's incomplete, then there's incomplete digestion, and we're not getting the full benefit of our second food group. And then we all know the experience of being negative and eating the mouth food. Gurdjieff has a beautiful aphorism that says, if you know how to pray, you know how to eat. The difference between mechanical and conscious effort. We understand that the general idea in this work is that man is asleep, but that he can awaken if he makes right efforts. Let me ask you what you understand about effort. Supposing you come to a difficult passage in something that you are reading, and you have to make an effort to understand it. Otherwise, you will simply pass it over and go on to the next paragraph, which is perhaps more easily understood. Effort, therefore, means concentration of some kind. How often do I cast aside an article on the cosmos from the scientific point of view, promising myself that I will study it later? And how many times do you think I actually study it later? I can say quite truthfully, practically never, but occasionally. And that's why we're encouraged when we read the commentaries to read them like a student. Don't read it like it's familiar, but read it like a student and engage with it. Ask yourself, Nichols' writing style is so beautiful because he's constantly asking us questions. Try to answer the question. And then he'll answer it as he goes on in his commentary. But read it like a student in that way to really engage it, because what we're doing is not only are we working on the side of knowledge, but at the same time, we're exercising the intellectual center, which adults need so much, and we're also applying the idea to us immediately. Okay? Now, consciousness does not grow from mechanicalness. Increased consciousness, which is the object of this work, can only grow through effort. You may think that you all make efforts, such as getting up in the morning, cooking your eggs, making your meals, catching trains, but these are not efforts. Although you might connect them with efforts, they are mechanical efforts. Do you see that from the standpoint of the work, a mechanical effort is not an effort in the work sense? It is your mechanicalness that makes you do these things. If you don't catch the bus, you will lose your job at the office, and so on. So you can see that you're not making effort, but it is making effort. Now, for heaven's sake, don't think that to make conscious effort is not to catch the bus in the office, not to cook eggs, etc. This is quite silly. And it's an idea of effort as many people have that are used to have. Excuse me. This is quite a silly idea of effort, such as many people used to have, standing up in an empty bus or eating Coke or some such absurdity. We've got to study in this work what the work means by effort, as distinct from mechanical effort. O once said that the whole of nature has to make effort. The hard-working birds have to lay eggs, rush about all day finding food, feeding their young, and then, as often as not, fly to Africa, and many of them will die. But this is mechanical effort, and therefore not effort in the work sense. It is nature driving them. It is laws. It is a necessity in the same way as our lives on this imperfect planet demand necessity in order to exist. We have to do what we have to do. And if we do what we have to do, we may get to the level of what is called in the work, good householder. What do we remember of good householder? A good householder keeps an awareness that we are in this world, but not of this world. Anything else on the good householder that comes to mind? Good householder, as he says here, participates in the general activities, the necessary activities of life. We work our jobs. We have our social lives. We participate in our government. We participate in commerce. All this good householder stuff. But then comes the work. And it says that good householder is a necessary level to really begin this work. That to not be at the level of a good householder, we may not be stable enough to work on ourselves. But the work starts from another level in its definition of what efforts we have to make. Suppose you're running for a bus to your office and you're cursing and swearing, then do you understand from what you know of the work already that you are negative? Now, where then does the work effort come in? We must make extra effort to do such things without being negative, without being identified. Life does not demand this extra effort, this other kind of effort. The work does. Now today I want to talk to you about identifying, which is so closely related to being negative. We do not realize how much we are identified, and so under the power of things. What is the opposite, or let me say, the antagonistic state to being identified? That's a good place to pause and ask yourself the question. What answer do you come up with within? What is the antagonistic state, or the opposite, if you will, being identified. The beginning of the power to remember yourself. Now all work effort lies beyond mechanical necessity. They are extra. They are not necessary for the lives of ordinary, for living of ordinary life. They belong to another level of ideas. Work efforts are connected with what the work teaches, and we must gradually distinguish between needful mechanical effort and these extra efforts which the work teaches us to make and life does not. Life wishes to keep us asleep. That's really an astounding sentence. Life wishes to keep us asleep. So try to distinguish in your mind between necessary mechanicalness and the extra efforts which are needed to change the level of being. That is, awaken from the sleep in which we are caught in the vast machinery of mechanical life called nature. We can serve nature or not. To serve nature is not to work. I will add one more thing, namely, that if you will consciously what you have to do out of necessity, you will be in a different state right away. I'll read that again. If you will consciously what you have to do out of necessity, you will be in a different state right away, and you will be working on yourself. But I leave it to all people who are teaching this work to explain what the conscious efforts are that we have to make, and of which I have talked so many times. To repeat them all at once more would mean I should have to repeat the whole work. O said, the only emotion that we really know is the emotion of being identified, and that we have no real emotions because we are always identified and worried, anxious and negative about everything that happens to us. To have pure emotions would mean not being identified. How marvelous! To will and to be identified are different. So try willing what you have to do out of necessity and working on necessity. For instance, you can will to catch that bus. Mechanical effort of necessity is not conscious effort, but the willing of it will make it conscious. To will what happens to you will lift you above mechanicalness. To will a thing is not to complain. To complain about your life is not to work. I do not mean only externally in speech, but to think in your spirit. This goes back to what Tracy was talking about this evening, work in spirit. To argue from these senses is, again, not to work. Physical sight may be the clumsiest way of understanding things. Esoterically, sight means insight, that is, understanding. Taking these things as you see them will make for complaining, and complaining is not understanding. So the exercise for this week is to make effort to will what we have to do mechanically. If you have to drive in traffic, will it. And hold that will while you're doing it. If you have to have a late appointment, have that late appointment, but will it. Give yourself permission and direction to have that experience. Will? Will it consciously? Any questions about that? Alan?
I just wanted to observe that Thich Nhat Hanh has a chapter in one of his books, don't wash the dishes unless you want to wash the dishes. And it's all about doing things mechanically and consciously.
Yeah. Yeah, very good.
Do we get extra credit if we learn that chart?
Yeah, it's called Brownie Points in Heaven. If you have to wash the towels, will it? Okay, while we're in such a good mood. Yeah. If you have to pay the bills, will it? Yeah. You know, that's handling money is one of the places, a great place is to work, to observe ourselves, to will what we cannot help, to take a different attitude on it. And in willing it from the spirit of the prayer that we know that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. And so I can give freely and receive joyfully. And let's know that together. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed we are to simply remember God. Yeah. Would somebody help with these here? No. Thanks, Todd. We don't often find a commentary that gives us examples of positive emotions. And sometimes the wondering comes up, well, what is a positive emotion? What is this emotion that arises from within, that's coming through us from the higher centers? Thank you, Billy. Thank you, Todd. And one of the best places to read about that is in Father Thomas Keating's book, The Fruits and the Gifts of the Spirit. It's a beautiful book, and when you read that, you can relate to that work idea of, oh, this is the experience of positive emotions. Together, we bless these tithes and offerings to the victory of consciously chosen love in each of our lives and across our planet, over the lie of separation and our useless acting out from fear. Amen. Brothers and sisters in the work, thank you for being here tonight. Thank you for being part of the conscious circle of humanity at this level. And let us will what we have to do. Amen.